welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is Laura House, actor, stand-up comedian, and sitcom writer on CBS's Mom, George Lopez on ABC, and The Rosie Show, among many others, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the past year, she's been teaching sitcom writing and meditation here at Actors Comedy Studio. I personally want to hear about the sitcom that you're pitching right now called How to Hate Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We'll hear more about that in a moment. First, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACS Digital TV. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Laura House. Hello, Laura.
Hi.
So you have a lot of stuff going on, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, you're writing, teaching writing here, teaching meditation. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the writing thing that you've been teaching here at Actors Comedy Studio.
Because
I heard awesome things about it. That's why I wanted
to know. Oh, thanks. It was a great class. Well, I guess I'll give you some context. My background is I started as a stand-up comic in Austin, Texas. So I grew up outside of Dallas, and I went to Austin and went to school, and I went to do comedy, and my parents told me not to, and then my mom made me get a teaching certificate, so I...
Yeah, because comedy leads to harder stuff. It's like the gateway.
Well, it's more like no one makes a living at that, and that's completely beyond our conception of a life choice.
Yep.
And they're very just nice middle-class people, and they were like, that's insane. And also I didn't really have the communication skills to, like, you just want to do something at, like, 18 or 20. It's not like you can go, well, you know, here's my reasons or what. You know, I just had this, I just am drawn to comedy. And so I taught seventh grade, and I did stand-up at night for several years.
Yeah.
So I...
And I saw some clips that teaching seventh grade didn't really work out.
You mean for my stand-up?
Well, it didn't work out. It wasn't the right spot for you. Teaching seventh, being in seventh grade teacher.
But you said you saw some, like, what are you...
Oh, yeah, some stand-up.
Alluding to.
Some stand-up clips.
We were talking about being a seventh grade teacher. Well, I mean, I had jokes about them. I mean, I was actually a very good teacher. But, yeah, I had jokes like I'd go in hungover and trying to hide hickeys and stuff.
Right.
I mean, I was 25 and teaching 12-year-olds. It was crazy. So, anyway, after a year of open mic, MTV came to town, they did a showcase, and I ended up starring on a TV show. So that's my... So I started in a weird way.
Right.
So sometimes when people are like, how'd you start? I'm like, well, it literally never happens like this, but this one time. So I... the writing teaching that I do now, because I started as a stand-up and was writing for myself, basically I was starring the show as myself, and I had no tools on how to do that. And also you're so like... self-conscious and whatever, you know, when you're 20, like, I don't know, I just want to be good, and I don't know how to write a TV. It was a lot to take on. So I have developed, now I've made a living writing as a TV writer for like 10 years, and I perform still, but primarily my income is for writing. So I developed this thing last year that I love of, I help people, especially performers. So I feel like funny people know that they're funny, and they, to some degree, know how they're funny, you know, especially if you're, like, an actor and working or trying to work. But that doesn't mean you know how to, like, put yourself in a scene or write that scene or sort of figure out who you would be talking to in that scene. So I made this really cool, I'm proud of it, but I made this really cool curriculum that I teach now at the Actor's Studio, which is called Writing for Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically use, like, how Gunnar talks about, like, archetypes.
Yep.
So you're kind of, like, identify your archetype, but you also describe it. And you create this character for yourself, but out of the description of that character, like, say, you use, like, if you can describe that character in, like, six adjectives, you can take some of those adjectives, take the opposite word and create other characters around them. So your other characters around the lead aren't just random.
Yes.
Like their next door neighbor fixes motorcycles. Like,
well,
it actually is going, they're going to have personality traits that's going to trigger your lead character.
Yeah.
And then we write scenes and stuff from there. And people loved it. They were like, I've never written anything and I could do this. It was great.
For me, that's the key. When I, as a student, started to learn, and we have learned about these 10 archetypes of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as an actor, you play them, and some of them are you, and some maybe never you. And this is the vocabulary that the writers use, right? So they put certain people together because they will trigger each other, right? People are best friends who have some things that irritate each other all the time. I mean, yeah, you don't have just random people in this thing.
You have to think about what are their personalities.
What do these other characters bring out in this person? How do they push them?
Well, it's a shorthand because, like, you know, you can look at The Odd Couple all day. And, it's a great cornerstone example of an unlikely duo, you know, kind of the perfect comedy pairing. Right. And we know that because it's worked for so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, they'll do an all-female cat. Like, it just works because you have a neurotic and a buffoon,
right,
you know, or that sort of thing. And so, but you can, without having that terminology, to me, you can look at it all day and go, well, but he's kind of uptight and he's kind of lazy. So do I just write for a lazy and, like, it's so, you could drown in it.
Yes.
So, to me, archetypes are just like, I really have never been in a writer's room where they've mentioned them. So no, it's not the language of writers. I wouldn't say that. But as a writer, it helps you zero in on things better.
Yeah. And maybe people don't think about them as a conscious, but yeah, when you put a team together, when you put something together. Over the summer, I was watching some old Honeymooner episodes. And there was a scene, something was happening, and Norton leaves the room. And Ralph says, if that guy wasn't my friend, I would have nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's it. That's the beginning. That's perfect. Like every sitcom, guy and his friend or woman and her neighbor and, you know, like people with the parents with their kids, that's what it's all about. If this person wasn't my best friend, I would have nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
But
that's
what the show is made out of.
That's why generally, like, family comedies and office comedies, because you're stuck with those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Generally. Like, you just can't get away from them.
Right.
I mean, I guess another thing is, you know, you're either at work or at home. I guess that's just the fact of life. But that is also, like, that's the life experience of, like, you can't get away from people who make you mad. And that's the core of comedy is, you know, whereas, like I watch, I incessantly watch Law and Order, which is so dumb, but I just watch them constantly. I mean, my boyfriend is like, I don't know why you constantly want, but like, everybody's working for a common goal. And there's always like, you know, somebody's like, what? I'm in charge here. And they're like, no, you're not. And there's a tiny conflict, but everyone's trying to solve the crime or whatever.
Yes.
And in comedy, like, well, everybody's just for themselves, really. You know, like, if you're all going different directions and, you just want to create. But you don't want to do it randomly. So I just sort of, like, put this technique together where it's like, here's the lead. And from that lead, we're developing other characters. And
other people.
It goes from there.
I love this quote. I wrote it down. The core of comedy, you can't get away from people who irritate you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's healing about it, because that's every day in life is like, people are awful.
Yeah,
I'm fascinated by it, and comedy writers, like, I really only care about comedy. Like, I think it's amazing what good comedy is and does. I think it's incredible that you can watch a stand-up and you can have the best stand-up and you can have an experience of either, like, oh, I think that, but I didn't know I thought that until you said it. Or you can have the experience of like, oh my God, I never would have thought of that, and you just blew my mind.
Right.
Like, I think it's the greatest thing. So yeah, thank God there are people who dedicate their lives to just doing that.
To making people laugh. Yeah. Tell us about How to Hate Yourself. Mm-hmm. This is a sitcom that you are pitching at the moment.
It's a couple of things. It's last year I did a stage show.
At the Hollywood Fringe.
Yes, yeah. At the Fringe, and very well received, and that was great, and sold out shows, and, you know, I'd never done a Fringe festival before, and it was really cool, and I was afraid this wouldn't work, the Fringe is kind of, you know, it's, obviously it's there to, like, you can experiment and stuff. And so my good friend, and he's a great actor and comic and director, Craig Anton. He was in Mr. Show and Mad Men. And I mean, he's amazing. So he directed it, and I took all these sort of life stories I had, and I had also done this character, like, on my website, larahouse.com. There's a, you can click on How to Hate Yourself, and I have these videos of, like, basically like a motivational speaker,
yep.
but she's training you how to hate yourself.
Right.
And ultimately, she's telling you to do stuff. Like, for example, like, look on Facebook. Did your cousin have an epic day? Yeah. You didn't have an epic day. He's better than you. Hate yourself. And so it's, like, outrageous, but
yes.
it's also, that's what everyone does all day long.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
have you ever
yeah.
seen a nicer house than the one you live in? Yeah, you're not as good as them.
Right.
Hate yourself, which is kind of, to me, like, what people are just sort of doing constantly as they go through the world. So...
But again, never fully recognizing that those voices are there, but they're there all the time.
It's just blowing
yeah.
it out.
Yeah.
yeah, it's taking that voice that will make you cry if you don't
yeah.
if you don't expose it, but like blowing it out and like, yeah, maybe you're just supposed to do that. And her whole point of view, this person is, you know, like that little voice inside everybody has of like doubt and
yeah.
fear and shame, and you know, it doesn't go away no matter how many times you read The Power of Now. Why doesn't it go away? Because that voice is right. And so she's like, turn up the volume on that voice. Like, stop fighting it. And it's funny to me because I never run out of things to say about it. Like, because it's, there's just part of the brain that as humans, it's bizarre because it's totally anti-evolution. But we, there's a part of it that's all, like one of my techniques that I teach. So part of the show is like a seminar you've
mm-hmm.
signed up for
mm-hmm.
called How to Hate Yourself, like as if you went to Tony Robbins.
Right.
And I'm showing you how to hate yourself. So one of the techniques is double what you don't have. Like you, I'll...
Double down, yeah.
Well, like you tell me right now, like what, like for a project or something, like what's the most amount of money you've made for something that you feel great about? Like
in one, what for one?
One chunk or
one
year,
chunk.
Like, you know, there's like I can think of like, oh, that was a good year. That was,
I've
know.
Had a project where I brought in $70,000.
$70,000, which
yes.
is amazing. It's not $140,000.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Hate yourself. Like
yes.
double what you don't have. Anything you feel could like, I made $1 million last year. Wasn't 2 million. Oh, hate yourself.
The first
like,
million is easy. It's
yeah.
the second million that's hard.
But just like, I just think that's what the brain does of
yeah.
like, you know, like, oh, I lost 10 pounds. Wasn't 20. All right. No,
yeah.
you're right. I should just never feel good. So, so the show that I did was part that and then part traditional, solo, you know, my,
sure.
my going through life and like, I never quite felt right and all the stuff I did to try to feel whole or fulfilled and I'm adopted, like looking, I look for my birth mother and
yep.
I, you know, I'm telling these stories. And so, yeah, overall funny, but some really deep,
yeah.
poignant stuff and drama. And, anyway, so I
and
did
so
that
it,
show.
Yeah. How does it work?
It
as a
was
sitcom?
Successful.
Or,
I wrote it as a half hour. The actress Katie Sagal was really interested in producing it. We pitched it around.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sell last year, and now we're sort of retooling, and we'll go out again
yeah.
with a different version, or we might end up with a web series version or something.
Right. Well, I loved the headline, the log line, right? I mean, I read it, and I said, yeah, I get it immediately. The log line is, a young woman working in self-help battles her inner voices of self-hate.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm real proud of it, because it's...
Yeah.
So honest. I
yeah.
mean, like I was walking and I would say this sometimes at pitches and we pitched to everyone, Netflix and Amazon and everything. And, but it's like, I was walking my, I'm heterosexual. I just happen to be, but I'm walking my dog around the neighborhood. I've been in a loving relationship with a man for 5 years. I'm walking my dog and I swear to you, this voice in my head was like, you would be so much more interesting if you were a lesbian. And I was like, what? Just walking down the street, like
yeah.
there, like there's no. These voices come from the weirdest. You know, you can drive, and in LA, it's the worst. Like you drive by a billboard. Oh, I didn't do that movie. Oh, great.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
like
something else I didn't do.
Yeah, like
yeah.
everything is just meant to hurt you. Like there's
yeah.
no. You know, like go by a restaurant. Oh, I should be vegan. Great, I'm an asshole. Like
yeah.
it's there's no end to it.
No, I had that problem. I realized in San Francisco, I was like, okay, I'm 37. I'm a straight guy. You know, I have no street credibility. In San
yeah.
Francisco. Like, nobody cares that I'm there. There's nothing interesting about me at all. so, yeah.
It seems like you could just scoop up all the straight women.
Well,
like,
yeah,
there's
San
not
Francisco,
enough straight dudes for them.
San Francisco is a strange place.
I lived there for a year.
Yeah, it's all. It's a lot of stuff. So this woman, if we think about those 10 characters of comedy, what character is she? What archetype is she?
Oh, for the How to Hate Yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought about it. narcissist, I guess.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I mean, because she's very, it's a very, and it's how I think of self-help people, that I'm really not a fan of them.
Narcissists have an entitlement.
There's an arrogance. Yeah. And there's a I'm right. And there's also one of the things, because I guess I'll probably become more of this in the future, but I think I'm becoming sort of passionately anti-self-help because mm-hmm. it's a billion-dollar industry that promotes people feeling they have to fix themselves. And it's really shitty. I understand, and I've had my own places in life where it's like, oh, this really helped me and whatever. But kind of at its core, when you look at the stuff that we don't, say, get mad about, magazines, like, they're so shitty. Like, every magazine is like, you're kind of fat and you should do more sit-ups and stop eating cheese and make someone love you. Like, all the headlines of magazines. Magazines are like, this is so insulting, but it's accepted as part of culture of like, oh, but they're helping me or whatever. And I just think it's, so yeah, there's an arrogant narcissism to like, absolutely, you should hate yourself. And, I think very much along the lines of like, also self-help, the people who make it to like guru status, like we know their names, like how arrogant are you?
And so the question under mm-hmm. this is, you know, you're a gremlin. What do you know about that creature? What does that creature look like, sound like, smell like?
Susie Orman. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of like when I do the like How to Hate Yourself
uh-huh.
coach. It's like, because it's also, but that's what's funny to me is like the idea that it's kind of a person who's kind of put together a little better than you.
Okay.
Like, it's not a shitty little thing in the corner. It's like, no, she actually, that's a very expensive blazer and she's all together. And so, like, you know, I love opening How to Hate Yourself as the How to Hate Yourself coach. And I just use the same name, Laura House, but it's like, and just and like, hello, who's ready to hate themselves? And I throw out T-shirts and there's stickers and I've printed up M&Ms with my face on them. Like, it's ridiculous.
You can do that? Make M&Ms with your face on them?
Yes, you can do anything. M&Ms.com. Well, wait,
stop the presses.
M&Ms.com, it's called the internet.
I did not know that.
Yeah, no, it's the, well, like.
I know, I know you can get a toaster now that will toast in any image you want. So I guess if you wanted to put yourself on your toast every day, you could have that. But I didn't know about the M&Ms.
M&Ms. Well, like, a lot of people will do it for, like, weddings. It'll say, like, Mike and Katie, you know, or on Forever or whatever. Yeah.
But they're so small.
But then they come in, like, a little package of, you know, 20 of them or whatever. Uh-huh. And they're on, you know, they would be, like, when you sit down for dinner, it's one of the little things they give you at a wedding or whatever. But yes. I mean, not a lot of people do it to be a self-hate coach. And in fact, they turned me down because I wasn't thinking, I did it one time and it was fine. But when I did it the second time, I thought it would be funny to have my face on some of, you can get an image and some words and just to put like hate yourself and my thing. And then they were like, we can't print hate yourself on M&Ms. Like, they have like they won't
have
cuss words or like,
they have,
you know,
a code.
I'm sure like Dick and Balls or whatever, they have they have a standard. But
so
but I was like,
really,
oh, I was like,
about,
oh,
this.
Yeah, so I put like H2HY, which is like the shorthand for how to hate yourself.
How to hate yourself.
No, but I mean, in those terms of that inner voice, like, it was very freeing to me to make comedy out of that voice. Because to me, like, the best comedy is the stuff you don't want to talk about. Like, Roseanne was about poverty. Nobody wants to talk about, like, barely having enough money for your family, but she made it funny. And, like, that's the best comedy. So to me, and sometimes when I pitch this, I would say this, like, arguably, that voice in your head is the bane of everyone's existence. Like, the most painful thing in your existence sometimes is that inner shitty voice in your head.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to make a comedy out of that.
Now, what is it about...
I'm saving the world.
Yeah, why do you want to work with that kind of material? Like, the things that you most don't want to reveal or say? I mean, that's what you want to work with.
Because I guess that's what helped me the most. Uh-huh. Like, because I'm really moved by when people... Like, there's a lot of storytelling shows right now in L.A., and it's been popular for a while. And then also, like, The Moth is...
Sure.
Popular nationally and probably internationally. And, you know, when people tell a story where they're vulnerable,
yeah,
people heal by hearing it.
Right.
Simply. Like, people really, you know, like, we can all laugh at fart jokes. And, you know, there's certain things that are just funny and silly and fun. But there's this depth when people are like, I had this fear. I went through this situation. I had this. And, like... And the ones that are hard to talk about and the people who have the gift to, like, make that funny. And you can sit there and go, oh, I had something, so I'm not alone.
Right.
Oh, they're relating to me. And I think it's healing for the storyteller and the listener that can go, like, you can let go. And for women, all groups have their own sort of things that they're working through. Like, but for women, you know, there's a lot of shame with, like, basically every sexual activity from 15 to 35 we're supposed to feel bad about. And to that I'm like, fuck you. Like, no. So I think it's like to kind of give a voice to the thing that goes, ugh,
yeah,
if you weren't a dumb slut for so long. And just like that you can go, oh really? Well, I'm gonna face that, you know.
Right,
and
right.
And I don't know, I don't even think that I want to work with it. It's like that's just what occurred to me currently.
You have to. So is there, I was going to say a trick, but what's the key to taking something painful and uncomfortable and making it funny? I mean, what is that?
I wouldn't know.
What does somebody have to do that?
I wouldn't know a key. I mean, I just make things funny, so I don't know how to address that. Like, that's just something I've always done. Like, we read in seventh or eighth grade, we were reading Beowulf. And when it got to the part of, and I got in trouble from the teacher because she thought I was fucking around, but I was legitimately reading Beowulf. But when it got to the part where they were like, they like killed Grendel and ripped the arm off and then like nailed it to the wall of like where they eat, I just started laughing uncontrollably. And she was like, oh, what? She thought somebody had passed me a note or,
right,
you know, or whatever. And I was like, are you fucking kidding? Like,
this is
our enemy. We're going to nail his arm to the wall. I was like, this is insane. And she like couldn't believe I was finding such joy in this thing. But like,
when you say it that way, I think of that's something Zoolander would do.
It's insane.
When you say it like that, yeah.
But that's like, are you kidding me? And like, everybody else is just bored and not even pay attention. But I was like, they're nailing, where they eat, they're nailing. It was just so dumb. Like, what a stupid thing. And my dad's a hunter. I get it. I grew up with deer heads in the wall. But it's just like, what? Like, yeah, got that arm. What? So anyway, I guess it's still funny to me. But
evidently.
I just make things funny. Like, it's just how I see the world is not... with a great amount of acceptance. Or I think there's a kind
of... You're kind of a bullshit meter.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think somebody's... maybe Chris Rock in an interview one time said, like, comedians... He was like... I think he was saying, like, it was lonely, but, like, essentially it's weird to be a comedian because you see... It's like you see ghosts. You see things in a room that other people don't see. And... I have that to some degree, you know, so I just have that. Like, where people are like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, you really don't think this is ridiculous, you know, like, so as far as making it funny, also I can do it for other people. Like, this is what
happened. When have people said, what is wrong with you in response to your work?
Constantly.
What are they, responding
little,
to?
Because I'm just laughing at stuff that, I mean...
Beowulf
was the one specific example.
Yeah, okay, but stuff like that.
Right,
things that are not supposed
like
to be
that,
funny.
When they're like, this is a old literature that we're, you know, enriching our... Whatever Why ever you fucking read Beowulf when you're, you know, 12 in Grand Prairie, Texas, whatever people think that's going to do for you. I'm like, I'm experiencing the humor of hundreds of years before. Like, I just think it's funny. So I don't know. I wish I could think of 10 more examples, but people ask me what's wrong with me all the time.
And it's not rhetorical. It's a very common,
it's a very common, like, I was
they really want to know
obnoxious quite a bit. No, I mean, they're insulting me. They don't really want to know. They're just saying, like, stop it.
Yeah.
But the, I was called, like, obnoxious as a kid. And, the you know, smart aleck, that was a big one. You have a smart mouth. And because I would just, like, okay, here's one. I was in my friend, again, like, eighth grade. We snuck out of the house, me and my friend Hillary. And at that age, and we were good kids. We're on, you know, like, the bad kids in honors algebra or whatever. And, like, but we just, you just want some freedom. So it's like, even, we're walking around, it's night, like, you're so excited. So we were walking, we were going to maybe go to the Stop and Go, that's sort of like a 7-Eleven there. And a cop came by and picked us up. And now, of course, as an adult, I know, like, well, of course, if there's 13-year-olds walking around at night, like, you take them home.
Sure.
But at the time, you know, when you just feel, I would always felt kind of tougher than I am. Like, my...
I look like
any sort of middle-aged valley lady, but, like, I'm like a rebel inside, like, I'm Fonzie. And so, it's just so stupid. And no one else can acknowledge that with me. That's how I feel. And so, but I remember this cop picked us up, and he was like, he was trying to scare us the way people with no power actually try to
scare
intimidate
kids. Yeah, sure.
Kids. Yeah. So he was like, you know, there's a lot of... you know, there's some crime going. You girls got to be careful. Like, he's really hoping we'll think, because we're like, oh, I'm gonna take, like, we're about to get in so much trouble. Like, come take us home, you dick. And so, but he was like, yeah, I gotta get, you know, get you home. Just out wandering around. It's not safe. There's crime out here. There's people breaking into houses. And I legit, not kidding, I said to this cop, I said it. I go, then if people are breaking into houses, why are you taking us home? Like, that's where they're going to find us.
That doesn't make any sense.
And he was like, oh, you smart mouth. And you're, but I was like, we were safer out here. And like,
so that part of you, that's kind of a bomb thrower. That anytime you see things.
That was funny at all. But it was completely logical based on his thing that people are breaking into houses. And I'm like, then we're safe on the street, you dick. I'm still mad at that guy.
You're still mad. I can tell you're still mad.
Did I answer your question? Oh, I think you make it funny just by calling it out. Like, when people go, like, if somebody goes, oh, I'm afraid I'm not going to get this job. And if you were to keep, and that's a painful. And if you kept at, like, why? And if you really got them to tell the truth, it would sound so stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not going to get this job because I'm afraid I'm not good enough to do this job because I'm afraid that I'm just not good enough of a person to live on the planet. And maybe I should have been an astronaut. Like, people do, like, we just all have insane, you know, if you're a life coach, you know, like, when you really get to the bottom, you're like, you know, that's crazy.
That's the work that if you go to a good therapist or you have a life coach, that's the work to do, is to take things that are kind of floating around at the edges of our consciousness, right? These voices
which are
that
hurting
we
you.
Hear, but we never really pay attention to.
And if you avoid them, you're just living with it.
Well, yeah. And if you bring them more into the light, they change.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you it's good, like the self-help thing, you're just going to fix it.
Yeah.
But you're right. When you bring it into the light and you say, wow, I do. I tell myself this every day. And now that I really look at it, it's crazy for me to say that to myself. It just doesn't make any sense. None of the evidence of my life supports it.
Yeah.
And it holds me back, you know.
So. Yeah. Like, I would have a thing of, like, oh, guys never like me. And it's like, really? I've been married. I've always had boyfriends. You're like, there's just... But if your head is just, no, that no one... Or, like, people hate me. And it's like, people hate me? You know, like, literally not one person hates me. So it's just this, like, crazy... Yeah, but in your head, it makes sense. And then you don't go to parties.
But it kind of makes sense. Yeah, it's just, it's not... Yeah. You would never, if you had a friend that actually said those things to you, you would get rid of them.
Yeah.
But because it's part of you.
If someone walked around saying that,
lives
you'd have them arrested.
In the, you know, in between area.
It's nuts.
When you find things that freak you out, whatever those things are, you know, that push your buttons, do you tend to avoid them or run at them? Or how do you deal with...
I guess I tend to avoid them.
Things that push your buttons.
Well...
Or what pushes, you know...
Inherently... Yeah. Oh, everything makes me mad. I mean, I'm sober, so I'm a sober alcoholic. So I identify... And there's a whole, you know, books about what alcoholism is and what an alcoholic is. So, like... Everything bothers me on some level, which I is partly human condition, but it's exacerbated when you're an alcoholic. Like you really, so like even, okay, parking and walking here, I was like, ugh, these streets are so narrow. And this chick came through like where you can bear when cars can barely get by each other, but she was going real fast and then she had to brake real fast. And I'm like, you fucking piece. Like, I'm just like, I'm trying to walk and I'm trying, whatever. So like, I just get mad all the time, but there's not, and even on the walk here, I was like, why am I so mad? And I go, because I can't change them. Because that lady's going to keep, and if I get out of her way, I'm letting her know, yeah, you barrel through. You just be a dick. We're all just going to get out of your way. So you want to like make a point of like, no, I'm not going to just get out of your way. And then like, that's how people get into accidents. So then what was really your point? Now you just, you know, have a wrecked car. So I was like, oh, I get frustrated because I can't change or control my environment. I can't make LA have half the amount of people that it has, but right. I would be more comfortable.
But you get mad about all kinds of stuff.
So I just all have day to long. Like,
yeah.
Well, and I don't like to be mad, which is sure. If, which is why I teach meditation yeah. and why I do it. And I've done it for like 9 years and taught for 7 or 8 and, but it's for that. It's just because it's like, yeah, I can't do anything. And there's just things are not the way I want all yeah. over the place. And like, you know, and to even find humor in that, like, it is funny to be mad because I can't control my environment. Like, it's silly.
Well, Larry David has made a whole yeah, career out of
he knows
making
how to make it funny.
Fun.
But you know, like,
he knows it's unreasonable, and everyone else knows it's unreasonable, but he still feels it. And so when you put it out there and let people laugh at it, you know, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, but he can frame it better than most people.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, like, Larry David shares a lot of attitudes of, like, really awful people. You know, just really... that aren't funny, and they're just terrible racists and, sure. you know, awful, awful people. So it really is a gift that he can follow his logic to the degree that he's like, I know I'm ridiculous, but also I'm completely right. And then also he knew enough in Seinfeld to make it not him and a different character. And then he knew enough in Curb where he always got his comeuppance, and a lot of yes. people don't understand that. Like, he can't just get away with that. Like, it would be unwatchable.
Well, if he
it
got
would be Entourage. What?
If he got away with it all the time, it wouldn't be funny. I mean, the
yeah,
reason
no,
that
of course.
It
would just be a terrible... Yeah.
Well, and on a certain level, like all the sitcom guys, you know, this is what they do. They go out and they have some adventure and they try to make things work, and it doesn't work, partly because them, partly because the world. And yeah, if they succeeded, then it wouldn't be funny. But they have to fail and get lowered, you know, and at the end, people still like him. People see his wife still loves him. You know, people still talk to them, and they live to do it all another day.
Yeah, I have a theory that all lead characters in sitcoms are alcoholics. Once I came to identify myself as an mm-hmm. alcoholic, I was like, oh, that's... And then the people around them are kind of Al-Anon caretakers. But they're, like, unreasonable.
Yep.
They, you know, react too quickly. They have unreasonable expectations of the world. Like, all these great... Like, basically the list of qualities of an alcoholic make a great sitcom lead. There's a lot of arrogance, and there's a lot of delusion.
Right.
There's a lot of, yeah, it's really handy.
Yeah. You say that in your class? The writing for
No,
writing for
I've
yourself?
Never said that in my class, no.
If you know
it's
an alcoholic or make
it's
it.
A narcissist. I mean, it, yeah. you know, sober or drinking, quite an alcoholic. And then yes. sometimes they're fully alcoholics, like Karen on Will and Grace.
Yes.
An actual alcoholic, but like, that is just an arrogance and a, like, right. nothing you say bothers me and I'm going to do it anyway. And a, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely her. clowns for you? Friendly, funny, scary? Clowns? Yeah, clowns. How do you feel?
I guess there's different kinds of clowns. I don't have a strong reaction to clowns.
Okay. Some people do, some people don't. Just checking.
Yeah.
All right, here's another question. As a child, you had an imaginary friend. That imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend. Where are they now?
I know, I didn't have an imaginary friend.
You didn't have an imaginary friend?
No, I wouldn't know how to do that. I would have felt... I feel like I thought about it when I was little, because you see it on TV, and I was like, I'd feel silly. Like, I don't see... That feels, I don't really think someone's here, so I would just be trying, like, posing to try to be cool.
That would feel dumb to you to have an imaginary friend.
Well, I wouldn't... Because I didn't naturally have one. I wouldn't know... Like, you can't just, you go, I should have one, and then you make one up, and then you, like, know that you're lying.
You had actual friends.
I had actual friends where I just had, I had a little blanket that I had very strong feelings for. I had a cat that I had very strong feelings for. But, no, I didn't have, like, a thing that wasn't
an imaginary
there.
Friend.
No, I think that would be very sweet. I think if I did have one, I would still be in touch with it in some ways. Because that's almost like believing in God. Right? Like, oh, I have a friend that understands me. That's probably why kids do that.
Yes.
That's what God is. So, and
maybe it's,
so I feel like
I grew up Catholic.
I
was never that for me.
Yeah, God was kind of a drag for the Catholics.
For the Catholics, it doesn't. there's another question. You have a...
create an imaginary friend who was nice. So really, that would be more of a God, like a comforting, because... Me and Dad in the sky, God is like a jerk. Then it's like, oh, imaginary friend would probably be more like a bro.
Right.
Then kind of that's your God.
Guardian angel. Kind
of. Yeah, yeah.
You don't have a guardian angel, do you?
No.
No.
I've believed in stuff like that very strongly.
Have.
I have, yeah.
But not now.
And I have believed myself out of it. Like, I've done so much... visualizing, and everything that you do, to the point of going, oh, none of this is real, and I'm not going to do it anymore. I've faithed myself out of faith.
Like, okay, I'm done.
Well, I'm done. No, just going, oh, this is all made up. Like, this is all made up, and it's not helping me, and it can make people crazy. And again, I feel like it was self-help of like, there's a degree where people can get some help, and then there's a degree that it's just crippling and really bad, like really dangerous for people. And so I think to me, I got into like a realm of, when I first read Louise Hay book at like 20 or something, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense to me. Like my, like
what's
my
the title of that book again?
You Can Heal Your Life.
Okay.
Louise
yeah.
Hay. So like really early like sort of mainstream metaphysics talk and stuff. I was like, this totally makes, like inherently it made sense to me. Like my mom was a 7th grade teacher, and she got bronchitis at the end of August every year for years. And even as a kid, I was like, well, she didn't want to go to school. Like I was like, she doesn't like her job. And I didn't need, like I inherently had a sense of that. And when I read like, oh, that is what it does. Like your body will react to emotional things that are happening. And I was like, that totally makes sense. And so I went, you know, I've done many things, but getting into... visualizing a future and whatever. And so I did a lot of that because I was like, oh, this totally makes sense. And I'm visualizing this. And then stuff would happen in my life that I was like, oh my God, like this is because I visualized it. And then those things would be real shitty. And I was like, this is bullshit.
So like you would visualize something and you would get there.
Like,
and
say
it would
a job.
Be, like, and it would be awful.
Yes. Several times. And then one time the person... I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm definitely going to say this. The reason I have no faith in spirituality, really, such as it is marketed to people, Rosie O'Donnell, because I had a situation years ago where I was invited to go write. She had a talk show on OWN in Chicago.
Right.
And I was invited to go write on it. And I was so like, oh my God, this is it. I'm the Harpo at comedy. It's rosy.
Yeah.
I'm cut in meditation.
Fantastic.
It was like literally Oprah and I do the same meditation. And I heard she pays for anyone to do. And, we'll, and I was like, spirituality and comedy. And oh my God, like, this is what they talk about. And like, I was several years sober and
it's
I was
the
like,
perfect storm for you.
This is
yeah.
exactly. And like, I was grateful and humbled and thrilled. And I was like, oh, and I just wanted to go do this thing. I was like, this is the thing that people talk about of like a life beyond your dreams or like when everything makes sense or these things. And so I went to Chicago and she's the meanest fucking person I've ever, she's cruel.
Rosie O'Donnell.
She will insult people to their fuck, like, insult people and then later go, oh, what, I make you cry? Like, she's awful. And I know people hear terrible things about her. And so here's the moment that I lost all my faith was she was on stage. I was watching it from my office and she was talking to Jane Fonda, who I don't, maybe nice or not, I didn't cross her path. But they were talking about all the stuff I believed in. Everything, they were like, you know, and you just, you can't be angry anymore and you've got to let it go. I know, it's really all about the love now. And I just believe, like, you know, we're all here to experience each other in love and ease. Like, absolutely. And they have, and they were just having this beautiful spiritual conversation.
Right.
And I was like, there's no God.
And I got to say, what you talk about, we have to let go of being angry. It's all about love. But I hear that a lot. And it's tempting to believe that that will help. In my experience, that's a bunch of crap. I mean, I just don't, not that I don't believe in love and all those kinds of things. I just don't think that you can will away things that push your buttons, things that make you angry. You know, and it's not about that stuff. It's that these are my buttons and, you know, I can't just let things go and then live in love and be happy. That just seems unrealistic. It doesn't work.
That's fun. That's interesting because that's not how I took it. I took it as more of she's lying.
Yeah, no, I get
she's
that.
She's a complete
yeah.
fake,
yeah.
awful, she's a terrible person.
Yeah, I get that too. Yeah,
and,
that's what you're talking about.
But on stage, she's pretending she's full of love and everything's amazing. Now, I'm a person who doesn't have a camera pointed at me, but my belief is not what you just said. My belief is, yes, definitely live in love. That's why, like, when chick with the car and stuff that make me mad, I go, oh yeah, everything irritates me. That's why I avoid it. Because I go, I guess some people could say, like, I don't want that. I don't want to give my serenity away over that. Or like, I don't want to be mad about that, so I don't care to engage. Like, you're always going to have reactions because you're a person, but that's why I, to the degree that I don't entertain things that are upsetting to me. Because I like to be happy and
yeah.
live in love. I just felt like, I guess I came to notice on my own and through lots, and also through like I meditated and then I got really into it. And I trained for 3 months. I went away for 3 months and meditated and had lectures and would, like, I went to India and I did all these things. And taught people, and I really, you know, to kind of get to a point where I was like, oh, these, like, people promising a lot, like, unreasonable things, like, they're selling you something.
Yeah.
And I just kind of got, like, bummed out by it. And I even had to deal with that of, like, not wanting to do it for a year, and then coming back to going, yeah, I'm going to do what's good for me and try to, I'll let people live, but I definitely have, clearly, as I've stated, developed an opinion about certain people or how they do
yeah.
stuff.
Opinions are good. Yeah, you're allowed to have
those
things.
And I'm only telling you because you asked.
Yeah. Here's a different question. If you had permission, I'm into people getting hit in the face with pies.
Okay.
But pies are usually thrown with malice, and then nobody wants to get hit in the face with a pie. But if somebody was going to give you permission to hit them in the face with a pie.
Oh.
Right? So it's not going to be an aggressive...
Like a pie is thrown with malice? I'm thinking if you have malice, you're throwing something other than pie.
All right, well...
It seems like a playful thing to throw.
Okay, well, that's fine. Anyway, so if you had permission to hit anyone in history in the face with a pie...
In history?
Yeah, it could be somebody alive today or somebody not alive, but...
I understand what history is.
But, yeah, it could be somebody today is what I'm saying. Yeah, but it's going to be totally okay with them that you do this. Anybody in particular
Gandhi.
That you would like to... What?
Gandhi.
Gandhi. You would like to hit Gandhi in the face with a pie.
Yeah.
What is it about Gandhi that seems...
Cheated on his wife. Mm-hmm. For one, I think it's funny... That you would just hit Gandhi in the face with it. For one, like, that would totally break his fasting. I don't know. I don't care who I would hit. I mean, if you have permission, it's not really... I don't really know what you're getting out of it. Because you have permission. I guess I don't fully understand the question. But I do think it's important that people know that Gandhi cheated on his wife. And he didn't treat women well. Because I'm tired of, we're taught historically that people are amazing.
Yeah.
That some people are amazing. And then we live in a world where we're like, no one seems amazing to me. Like, people seem real flawed. And it's like, I feel like childhood does not prepare you for adulthood. And I don't think five-year-olds should work in factories. But I think, like, if we were a little more normal about how we talked about our heroes and our forefathers and our blah, blah stuff. People would go like, oh, they're flawed people, so that's just what we're doing. Like, that's how they do it in Europe. I'm sorry. I'm a socialist.
How do they do it in Europe?
There's just a much more, when people talk about people, flaws are included. Like, they don't expect, they're not shocked by bad behavior. Or what. It's not so... Like, America acts like babies in a lot of ways. Of like, I can't believe so-and-so did this thing. And it's like, but you know all the presidents slept with other people. Like, you know all the, and I don't love that as a woman. I don't love that people, you know, men cheat on their, I'm just saying, like, it's like we're told everyone's perfect. And then we're let loose in the world at like 22 or 25. Just to be kind of confused and upset for 20 years. Like,
well, and that you're supposed to be perfect. Right?
Well, or like...
People are supposed to... Presidents are never supposed to do anything.
But you're constantly being shocked by... As opposed to like... In your... Like, I was a foreign exchange student in high school and I lived in Norway and it was a socialist European country.
Sure.
And they were like, we just don't get mad about this stuff. Like, America still has this like, people have sex, but we still have this puritanical, like, but I need to act like people don't. And it's just like... What? Like, what are we doing? It's a big waste of time.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you're right. We put people on a pedestal. We want them to be perfect in all these ways. And then when they're not, we get upset about it and it's not really relevant.
Yeah, you're just disappointed of like, you know, where people like, oh, like, because Gandhi did this thing that was good, so he was good. It's like, I was a dick in many ways was my understanding.
Yeah.
So well, I just feel,
a lot
I don't
of,
know.
A lot of people, yeah,
it's
a lot
like,
of people
can't
are.
We accept that we can have a consciousness where we go, okay, yeah, I get he was great in this way and not in this other way and not just be like, you know, everyone who died at the Alamo was a saint. Like, why do we have to, that's in Texas.
Yeah, in Texas,
but it's
yeah.
just like.
I never heard anyone say that in Los Angeles, honestly.
No, they don't talk, people, most people don't remember the Alamo, but we really, it gets drilled into us.
I'm sure, well, it's Texas.
Yeah,
it's Texas. Well, I would like to thank you, Laura Howes, for being on our show, Comedy Death Star.
Was I helpful at all? I feel like I just talked about things that made me mad.
Yeah, that's great.
I hope I was helpful to you.
That's why you're here.
Now we all know how to get into showbiz.
Yeah, no, that's why you're here. You're here to be you. Yeah, fantastic. Well, we invited you. Here you are. Former 7th grade teacher, now very funny sitcom writer, and person who's angry about a lot of stuff. But that's okay. You laugh about it. You're angry.
I find it helps.
Yeah, it helps a lot. So thanks for coming in this week.
Sure.
That's great. If you would like, out in the audience, to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email us at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week.